And welcome to Meathead Chatter episode 49. With me today is the man, the myth, and the legend you may not have heard of. This is Tim Welsh, right? Last name, right?
Yes, sir. Okay. Yes, sir. Yep, you got it.
Beautiful. So for all you guys that don't know Tim, why don't you, I kind of got aware of you, because we're both in like the club Mace functional fitnessy side of things a little bit.
Yeah, the unconventional scene.
Yeah. So I'm over here swinging heavy clubs and I'm at Home Gym Con last weekend or the weekend before, whenever it was. And Don from AdX is there. And they have a booth and we're talking and he's like, oh yeah, did you see Tim's coming to Vintage Games? I'm like, who's Tim? He's like, oh, he's one of the guys swinging a 100-pound club. How do you not know who Tim is? I was like, dude, cause y'all don't introduce me to anybody. Like, don't keep the big club swingers like secrets. Like, I want to know who's like up at that freaking level. Cause there's not a lot of us swinging that heavy, especially in the States.
No, especially
under 10, probably
50 pounds.
Yeah.
That's 50 pounds. Like I've seen a good portion of people pick up the 50 and, you know, get some motion out of it. But, you know, past that, the 80 pounds has definitely been a very humbling experience with that. But I love it.
Just like the forearm and like wrist tendonitis when you first try it is like, wow, I'm broken for 4 days.
There's a video that I have of when I first got my kit and the I used it for the mace, and I got the mace up to 82 pounds. And swung it around the first rep, it nearly took me off my ass. Dude. And then I had to brace myself for it. I only get 3 reps out
of it. So you swung the 82-pound mace for 3 reps.
Yeah.
That's awesome, dude. The most I've ever even tried is 70. So, oh man, I'm pissed now. I'm going to have to hang up on you and practice. I can't have you making me look bad here in a couple weeks, but...
Yeah,
cool.
It was for a couple of reps, but I will say that the feeling, I have a little bit more of a easier time with the maces, especially from AdX, just because of the longer handles.
Yep.
And I'm 6 foot three with a long.
You're six foot what?
6 foot three.
6 foot three. I thought you said 6 foot nine. I was like, Jesus! I knew you were tall, but.
No.
Yeah, I looked at your Instagram and I was like, man, he's not like that big of a guy. He's got to be tall if he's swinging that heavy. Like, you're not like going to be 5'8", you know, as lean as you are swinging something that heavy. I'm like, dude's got to be over 6 foot. So, okay, that makes me feel a little better at least.
Yeah, no, I'm 6 foot three, 215, 220 on a good day.
Nice.
And it's I've been swinging maces now for about 3 years. Actually, yeah, coming next week will be the 3 anniversary. I got my first AdX club, and that was the birth of what this behemoth of a fucking what would I call myself? It's like a sweet maybe barbarian is what I sometimes look
there
like
when I'm swinging around. So you actually have like a pretty good fitness journey too, because it's not like you were like morbidly obese or anything, but you definitely weren't like super lean. So did that journey kind of start? Because you were what, like 290, 280, something like that?
Yeah, that was 289 at my heaviest. When I first got out of the U.S. Army National Guard, I was weighing at my heaviest, and I also had a bad drinking problem then. So what I was able to do is then translate that same addiction that I had towards my alcohol and then translate it into the gym.
Nice.
And it's one of the more things that I tell people to do if they immediately are having any type of issues with alcohol consumption or alcohol addiction in general, is take that same addiction or take the same feelings that you have towards that and put it towards the gym, and you'd be surprised by just how fast that will come off, because within 3 months, 56 pounds came off.
Well,
and after that point,
it's interesting too, because like that's actually like they use that a lot in, I know, any kind of like habit change thing. Is it's not just like if you want to quit smoking, some people can just quit smoking, but like it's much easier and more effective if you replace that habit with another habit. That's why you'll see people sometimes that are, you know, having issues with alcohol switch to smoking, you know, or trade like another vice, but trading it for something productive. You're not getting the same calories anymore from alcohol, and you're increasing your activity. It's like a double whammy. Yeah, I could see how that would drop the weight off real fast.
Mm-hmm. And especially between if you're a mixed drinker, like if you like your Jack and Coke, or if you like your gin and ginger ale, you know, the shit like that, like you're not only just getting the alcohol, empty calories and sugars from there, but you're also then getting it from the same soda or whatever juices that you're mixing it as well. So you're double whamming yourself and basically having like half pints of ice cream within one shot, you know, just with the amount of sugars that you're already intaking between these alcoholic drinks and having 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 of them within a night. So you know, the count and it all stacks up, and doing that 3 to 4 or 5 times a week, and then those people who do it every single day, and they have a couple of margaritas every single day. Well, guess what? Those that empty those all those sugars and all those calories, they all add up. So the after the 56 pounds was dropped, that was the easiest part of the weight loss, and then the next 50 pounds to lose was definitely the more challenging, just because I had plateaued for a little bit, and then I had to switch up my regime, which then came maces, kettlebells, clubs, and with the assistance of that and discovering that, I was able to drop all the way down to my leanest, which was 185.
Yeah,
and I went from 289 to 185. I will never go below 200 again.
Just yeah, because so weak. I'm seeing your when was this post? This was October 1st, 2023, that post where you were talking about going 289 to 185. And, dude, you were, like, lean at 185. But definitely, I mean, you could tell you're maybe not as jacked as you wanted to be, you know?
No, not like now where, you know, I genuinely appreciate the strength that I have developed now between being able to snatch the 124-pound kettlebell now, between moving the 97 with ease and for reps, the swinging around the 80-pound kettlebell, 80-pound club, swinging around 80-pound mace. You know, there's a different level of strength that I've definitely, you know, have been able to appreciate now that I've re-put on the size that I've wanted to put on, after going so lean and being so shredded for a little bit amount of time. You know, it was great. Like, I looked fucking phenomenal. You know, it was great. I loved the way I looked. But I also, you know, at the same time, though, I was not nowhere near as strong as I used to be, where I was, you know, maybe I had nowhere near the amount of ab definition. Like, right now, I have nowhere near the amount of ab definition as I had when I was at my leanest. But I will take being as strong as I am over anything else right now, just because I was able to carry all my groceries and a box with one arm today and not even feel any type of tiredness, having to carry it for, you know, 5-10 minutes on one arm, and I'm like, oh, wow, I'm tired by now. But,
right,
you know, this level of all this stuff, and then also the sandbag stuff too. Like the 250, you know, I almost got the 300 up. You know, I got a long ass.
You got to move it a long way.
yeah. Like everything else with all the other lifts, like deadlifts, bench press, squats. It's if I really want to hit full range of motion, it's a long way down and it's a longer way up. So yeah, it, that's why it's like I know I'll never have like the giant physique that, you know, it's like someone like yourself over here walking around like a fucking unit.
Right, but I'm also 3 inches shorter than you, you know.
Yeah, but then not for nothing. Also, like your biceps are the size of my torso.
Right. So, I'm a thick boy.
So yeah, you got that size, but then you also got that mobility also to swing around the 100-pound club. But like, the big thing, especially in my community over here on Long Island in the fitness industry, we got some pretty big units out over here, but they can't put their heads behind their head. They can't even get their heads to the point where they can really get to the top of their cranium.
Well, and dude, I couldn't really either when I first started. So I've always been kind of more in the strength. So I did MMA for a while, and then the gym I was at had a lot of kettlebells. So then I got into kettlebell, and then I was trying to find a kettlebell gym, and CrossFit was the only thing that had kettlebells. So then I did CrossFit, and then I got into strength sports. So it was like strongman and powerlifting, and then I got less mobile, right? And so, yeah, when I tweaked my shoulder pretty good a couple years back prepping for a powerlifting show, that's when I found the maces, because I couldn't really do anything, and it was like the one thing I could do. So I did you know Fred Moore? Steamways Nation guy? Yeah, so
yeah,
he's got that.
Nation, yeah.
He's got that. Yeah, shout out Fred. You guys should go check out Steel Mace Nation and run his 10,000 swings.
One of the OGs of this podcasting game as well.
Yeah, I ran the 10,000 swings program he had on there. I took the reps a little higher just because I was trying not to beat myself up so bad, because I feel like that program, like the rep ranges work really well, but there's definitely some diminishing returns on the lifting part when you're not to toot my own horn, but I'm pretty strong when it comes to like barbell stuff. So I was like, like 1 to 3 reps on bench and squat and deadlift, like in the same week. I'm like, dude, that's not a thing I'm going to do and survive. So I took the reps a little higher, or I took the weights a little lower to make up for it. But the whole point of that was to get 10,000 swings in so I could look like I knew what I was doing with the mace, and it worked, man. And anyone can get there. Like I was like 280, 290 back then getting into it. So like all these bigger powerlifter guys that are like, oh, I'm too big to like get mobile for that. I was like, dude, I was 290 and I looked like I knew what I was doing by the end of it in 30 days. Like you're just being lazy.
See, and that, but that's also the part where it kills me, where it's like, I have a client of mine, named Joe, a little bit more on the larger side, but also was not able to bring his hand to the top part of his skull.
Oh, wow.
So for the first, when I talk about the most limited range of motion I ever had to deal with a client, it's one of the most limited range of motions I've ever had to deal with. So we took a club, and for every single session that we did for the 3 times a week that we would meet, for the first 5 minutes, we would do club pullovers.
Yeah, just take to stretch
club,
out.
Push it out, pull, bring it as deep as you can behind your head, and then launch it over. You know, maybe this week we only get a little bit behind the head. Maybe next week we get a little closer to the neck. Maybe the following week we get to a little closer. It took us about 7 weeks for us to fully get behind his head. Now he's at the point where he can basically, we're creeping up on 2.5 months now. We're creeping up on, he's at that point where he's getting right to the base part of his neck.
That's awesome.
So it's when these tools, yes, they're amazing strength training tools. Yes, they are amazing, you know, tools to burn an insane amount of calories and incinerate body fat, but they're also amazing PT tools as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, I use it for bulletproofing more than anything. And I love swinging heavy too, but it's not like I do that all the time. Most of my club and mace work is in like a similar format to how Fred had it in his program, where my only swinging day is Friday and it's like 500 reps on that workout. It's not like going heavy, you know? Cause I feel
conditioning.
So much of the benefit comes from the, you know, kind of the grease in that groove and like keeping that range of motion. You know, I'm still trying to, you know, bench over 500 pounds, but at like a lighter body weight now. So like healthy shoulders are going to be basically the only thing that's going to let me do that. So yeah, heck yeah, dude. Well, talk to me a little bit about what you did before. So you were National Guard, and then, I mean, you did like lifting and stuff, I'm sure. What did your training look like then versus what it looks like now?
So in the very, very, very beginning of me going to the gym, it's a combination of doing just traditional powerlifting because I had the size. I was, you know, 289, right. So I said, why not? Might as well use it to my advantage. And then started to include a lot of core and agility. So one of the other things, too, about being my size is that there's not a lot of big, agile, flexible people that are 6'3+.
Mm-hmm.
They're not not the average athlete in general. So, you know, Like in the state right now where I'm at, you know, I have some of the best mobility and I have some of the best agility in my body currently right now I have the best agility for my body right now, whatever great percentage. And it's all due to when I was at my heaviest, I was practicing that agility. So the more weight that came off, the faster I became. I became fluid in my mobility routines as well because I was bending my body and moving in certain ways, being so heavy. And then it basically translated into when I got to the point where I lost the beat of the weight, I was moving very buttery because I had lost all the weight when I was moving with that weight. So I put like a strength behind my mobility and a strength behind everything when it came down to focusing on that agility and mobility combat.
Yeah, you were doing weighted mobility work for a long time, and then when the weight came off, it was like, oh my god, look at all the cool things that I can do now.
Yeah, like, wow, my body can actually bend this way. Holy shit, I can really go around my blades when I bend. I'm just trying to grab my toes. I think I can grab my ankles. Wow, this is incredible. Yeah, it's all these the things that I also teach my clientele to do as well. It's all the stuff that I'm able to do now. It's not just stuff I did in the gym. It was, you know, if I was sitting around and I was home and if I was, you know, it's every single Sunday, I don't watch TV at all whatsoever. But when it's football season, it's the only time you'll catch me on a Sunday, 7 hours of my feet being up. And every now and then when there's a quick commercial break or if I'm really getting irritated, I'll drop down, do some push-ups, or I'll do some mace swings or I'll do some club swings. You know, something that's actively resting or actively moving with my body at the same time, but or do some stretches at the same time while watching. People, I love the excuse of, oh, I don't got time to stretch. Well, you had time to sit there and scroll on your phone.
Right.
You had the time to sit there and complain about a couple of different things about your body. You have time to sit there on your ass and watch Netflix, but you don't have. But you can't just, you know, while you're watching Netflix, you can't hop down into the ground real quick and, you know, make your body feel better. Like, it's not like you're pulling teeth. You're genuinely making your body feel better throughout the day. Like, that's one part of the money that I'll never understand that is the fact that you're not doing something where you're challenging your life. You're doing something that's going to improve your life and improve your quality of life and take away pain, bring you mobility. So it's when people tell me, like, oh, I don't have time to do this, it's the same excuse when people go, I have time to work out, but you have time to do other extra things that are taken away from your actual goals and progress.
Yeah, that's wild, dude. Yeah, it just takes effort. Like, I remember when I was in property management, apartment complexes, I remember I'd have like people who were in charge of like leasing, right? Like selling apartments. And there it's like we have one product that we're selling. Everyone that walked in there to look at an apartment knew exactly what they were going to look at. They knew the exact price. They wouldn't be there if it wasn't in their mind a decent fit. So like how much effort should you have to put in to make double your money in commissions? Like, I mean, if you give me a C minus effort, great things happen. And I feel like it's the same thing there too. Like you're saying, it's like, dude, do you want to watch the commercials? No, just move around for 30 seconds and then sit back down. Like it's so little effort, but it's like even a little effort is very hard for people. If it's not doing nothing, it's doing something, and doing something is hard. And I'm not saying it's not, I'm just saying it's not as hard as they're acting like it is. You know, speaking from experience too, you know, I was, you know, heavy. I was on purpose to be heavy to try to hit some numbers, but like, man, I definitely didn't want to do a whole lot of things when I was 300 pounds.
When I was 289 and I was down in Jack and Cokes and down in ice cream Oreo sandwiches. Oh man, that was my guilty pleasure.
That's amazing.
The
Oreo ice cream. I've never been a drinker, but the Oreo ice cream I'm down with.
I would tell you so. Oh my god, this is how bad it would get sometimes. So, especially ShopRite would have these sales every now and then where you get the 4-pack and for like, and it's like 2 for $5, so you get a total of 8. Well, I would spend 20, you know, and I would get basically anywhere between 6 to 8 to 10 boxes, depending on the mood I was in for the week.
Right.
There were times where when I would be too drunk to really just make anything or set myself up or anything. So what's easier than just opening up a wrapper and just downing an Oreo sandwich? Well, one night in particular, I downed 8 of them in one singular night. That was a good like 200-300 grams of sugar right there down the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention probably about 2,000 calories worth of ice cream and everything else. So, yes, it's safe to say when I woke up the next morning, my body was not in the happiest place.
The inflammation was so high.
oh my God. I remember waking up so stiff. I remember my knees were so bad. My back was tight. I remember just trying to even just get myself over to the bathroom and then just having a miserable time in the bathroom also. And then I learned my lesson to never do that shit again.
So, I guess,
and,
like...
one sandwich is fine.
So paint me a picture. So like, I feel like I train people as well. I own a gym here in Lafayette, Indiana, Premeditated Health and Performance. Y'all should check it out if you're around. And I train people. And it's weird. Like the people that are the most successful, the people that have like the big turnarounds like yours are the ones where there was like a moment where they were like, fuck. And then they started getting their shit together. Cause that would have had to have been something that you were going through too. Like what was it?
Absolutely.
I mean, if you're comfortable sharing it, I don't know. So
No, I'm an open book, and anyone who's if there is anybody tuning in from that's tuned into my show, my podcast, or tuned in from my Instagram page in general, I'm a full open book when it comes down to everything I went through, just because I'm a big believer in healing in public eyes, so that this way people who are going through the same thing, they can see a relatable story and they can understand that, well, shit, if he made it through this, then maybe I can still make it through as well. Let me actually also talk to this person and see what I can do as far as like getting like the cheat codes to getting out of my shit sooner.
Right.
So it was when I came out of the military, like I said before, I had developed this horrible drinking habit. And at the same time, I had lost the relationship I was in. I had lost the father figure that I was, I had my father, so to say, thankfully, God bless. But my uncle, for when my father wasn't necessarily in my life for the most part because of the alcohol, the man stepped up and really helped me develop my work ethic. At the age of 14, he was my first boss, working at Christmas trees, literally selling Christmas trees to the public, working for tips, 10 to 15 hours a day, just on tips, just for tips, hustling. So at a very early age, I learned how to hustle. Nice. I'm thankful for that. I'm beyond thankful for that now, because it really translated that into my training career with being able to stay in a gym for 10 to 15 hours. But
right.
June 26, 2018, I had been at my lowest. I was a bottle and a half deep, not like a small bottle. It was a big, big bottle of Jack Daniels, a bottle and a half deep into it. And I was the most depressed I had been. And I went to go down some pills. I started to down them. I started throwing them up immediately. So my body instantly rejected everything. I started throwing up all the excess liquor that was in my body, all the alcohol that was sitting there. And I just sat there for about 2 to 3 hours, just hurling. And waking up the next day, after cleaning up after a long night of cleaning, long night of cleaning, waking up the next day, waking up a little bit more thankful because, I had acted out in a moment of distress and I was instantly regretful of what happened. So I'm thankful that my body rejected it. But the stereotypical saying of when the grass looks a little greener, the sky looks a little bit bluer, then it's a little bit more of this is what life is supposed to feel like. And then it's like, wow, I know I can really make some changes here. Let me fall in love with the gym. And it was showing up to the gym, spending anywhere between 2-3 hours in the gym. I was also, like I said, I wasn't really working the greatest job either. I was working overnight at the marinas now after losing a great job that I had in sales. I had then downgraded to working overnight at a marina that was down the street from the gym. So I would work the marina shift, and then I would get off the shift, and I'd go work out.
Nice.
Well, while I lost a good portion of the weight, I then got approached. I approached one of the trainers at the local Retro Fitness that was I was training at, and I asked, what was the qualification to become a trainer? I'm currently thinking about doing it. Her name is Taylor. She's also a badass athlete, mama, OG now. Shout out Taylor. She's someone who answered all the questions. And then basically, 3 weeks later, I was hired there to basically become a trainer because I had something I was like, a little bit more on the personal side of training versus being knowledgeable, because I was still studying and I was still learning, but I had the personality to become a trainer. And the first four people that I was assigned to the first free session with, I sold it for my first four sessions.
That's awesome.
So it was like, okay, there's something to this there. So with that happening, I saw the true potential in this training career, and that is now 7 years ago. And that was when I was making $75 every 2 weeks for PT for now, and that was after taxes and all the other shit. So, thankfully being in New York, we have the amazing taxes that we pay that go to absolutely nothing. So,
when are you moving to Lafayette, Indiana and training people here instead? Our taxes are better. Dude, I promise you. I need another heavy mace swinger.
I'm on the traveling journey that I am right now because
nice.
You had somebody on recently that I'm very close with that's also here, Long Island.
I almost asked you if you knew Tom.
Yep, Tom is a very good friend of mine. He's also a coach basically for me. He's the one who basically got me to the point where conquering the quietest inner bitch that I have when it comes down to being more safe with the weight and actually just moving the weight. So he's the one who basically got me to snatching the 124 pounds. So like every time I go into a podcast, fans are talking about this guy. So,
hey, you brought him up.
I know. That's what I'm saying. Every time I go into a podcast, fans are bringing up this fucking guy, this goon.
Hey, this behemoth. Yeah. May 18th, me and him are doing a seminar at my gym here. You are more than welcome to come.
If I can manage the timing right now, we're at my gym, like this is a whole other story for later on, but we're dealing with a lot with one of our trainers who went down with a rare form of cancer. So I had to basically take on his clientele and took on his classes. So we're currently, battling out with that, and we're really trying to, make sure that we help him out as much as possible. But
that's fair.
Backtracking to Tom, the man, he is about 35, 45 minutes away from where I live, and I've known him for about 2 years now, and he's definitely somebody else that inspired me to really start doing the traveling with the training, because every time he would come back from either the trip in Texas, Florida, California, and it's like, well, shit. Motherfucker is my age, and he has exactly what I'm looking to do with my life, and particularly in the future with owning my own facility with the kind of community that he has. I mean, my goal is to, have my own facility, but I have a different mind for my facility, basically of turning it into not only just a place where people can train physically, but it's also going to be a place where people can train their brain and train their emotions psychologically. Place where people can meditate, a place where people can learn how to train their emotions and, deal with their stress versus, not everybody, being in this industry now for 7 years, not everybody is in that same mentality of that the gym is our comfort zone, the gym is our therapy. Some people genuinely despise the idea of working out. So, doesn't mean you still can't work on your emotions, though, at least.
So what is what does that look like? And you don't have to spill your whole business plan to me by any means, but so you're going to have a gym where it's like, it's a gym, maybe it's Club Mace focus. Like, I don't know, whatever your focus is going to be. Like, what does the nuts and bolt actually look like to kind of capture that vibe of the gym?
I have right now currently a 20-page business plan that's laid out right now, and the way I have it structured and the way I have it blueprinted is it's a 2-level gym. The first level being the main level of having everything that a traditional gym would have, from benches, from squat racks, from machines. Obviously, I'm going to throw in the kettlebells, the maces, the clubs, and my own taste of unconventional in there as well, because they should be in every single gym. But a little bit of turf, a little bit of everything for that level of the gym. But then the top level being the level of where there's a variety of different stations that you can train not only your emotions, but then you can also train your brain. You can train the way that you react. You can train your eyes. You can train the way that you talk. There's a way that also of turning into a meditation room, turning into a flow place type ideal, a enlarged sauna where it's like a very, very, very large sauna / steam room where you can sit there and bake yourself out and meditate and clean yourself and clean your floors out at the same time. It's all basically catered around the idea of creating a one-stop place to work on your mind, body, and soul.
Right. So it's not just the gym. It's kind of like the wellness piece too, on more than just the physical. That's interesting. All right. We're going to talk a little more about that later.
exactly what it is. You know, it's been a goal of mine that I set when I was 24, that by the time I'm 34, I'm going to have a facility, because I have, otherwise I would have just opened up a regular, a little spot that I could have, you know, rented out and took out a little business loan and, you know, did this already and have my own facility. But the plans that I have for the facility is the other part of it as well. Right. Is eventually trying to get enough profit to the community that it starts generating money that can be given out to scholarships for kids.
Right. When from a business plan side too, it's like you're going to have so many more avenues of income in that setup versus like a traditional gym, similar to like mine or like Tom's, that's more like class formatted. You just have a couple more places to pull from, which will give you a little more leverage to do other things like what you're talking about too, which is cool.
Yeah, and the biggest thing for me right now with it's location too, because I'm trying to figure it out how I can get it to be a spot that is fairly close to the high school here, so that the kids can, you know, go use the gym and genuinely train themselves, and you stop having these broken households, you stop having these broken families, because these kids develop these families at early ages of, you know, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. They're already a parent. And, you know, they're already coming from a broken household because their parents weren't necessarily around, or their parents weren't necessarily the best parents either. So you got to try to break the chain of this never-ending cycle of trauma, never-ending cycle of constantly layering the same issues that are just been passed down from generation to generation without really any real solution.
Right.
And I love my community to death to the point where, you know, yes, exactly what I want to do is I want to get to the point where I can get it opened up, that the spot that's fairly close to where the high school is, so that the kids don't have to worry about, you know, getting a ride to the gym. Or they don't have to worry about walking too far, you know, at least within walking or within running distance, you know, someplace where, or bike riding distance, so that this way they have a place to escape, because growing up, we're on the streets all the time.
Right.
You know, where I grew up, it wasn't necessarily the safest place to live, you know, between gang culture completely taking over the streets and taking over the schools. You know, we had MS-13. That was a major problem here where I lived. And this was, you know, this is, it made national news back in 2016.
Right.
But when MS-13 kidnapped and slaughtered these two girls that were 16 and 17 years old, and then dumped their bodies right in the middle of the street, you know, that was basically about 5 minutes up the road from where I live. Not even 5 minutes, probably about 3 minutes up the road from where I live. And growing up, I've had my fair share of encounters with MS, between being jumped and also between being, you know, attacked by our boys, you know, and coming in confrontation with being at the park, right, you know, at the wrong time with the wrong people. You know, it's, you know, it was a lot growing up in Brentwood during that time frame, that we had to be on our toes, that we had to really become street smart. You know, and I'm very thankful for that, because, you know, honestly, I'll say this the day I die. I'd rather have all the street smarts in the world that I have right now than go through any type of book smarts, because when I see these book smart people walking in New York City, especially, oh my God, they are so much to be easy to be taken advantage of.
Right.
So I'm a huge proponent in, you know, having the streets, not streets, but having life be your teacher in general, and learning
experience trumps knowledge. They're good. They're best case scenario, they're combined, but knowledge without experience is less useful than experience without knowledge.
Yeah. The thing that is, especially in our industry,
right,
the second someone gets a certification, they think they're instantly qualified to start telling other people instantly what to do. Meanwhile, they don't have a full understanding of maybe the reason why they're in that form is because they're anatomy, maybe because their femurs are a little too long, so they can't necessarily hit a certain range. Or maybe they're dealing with scoliosis, and they can't necessarily keep it back in the most straightest angle that you would like them to. So these other things that as soon as a new, or even my favorite, the fucking influencers that we have now that don't even have certifications, that or don't experience. Even have any type of background experience, and just have an experience and just working out themselves and think that because they were able to do what they were able to do for themselves, aside from juicing themselves up too, because majority of your favorite business influencers are on the juice as well.
Well, there's so much of like, there's so much like genetic predisposition too. Like there, I know a lot of guys that are just shredded to the bone, don't know anything, eat like trash. And some of them aren't even on anything. It's just their genetics are awesome. Like we've all known that kid that's like a super athlete that never trains and never does anything, but they're still just better than everybody. That's who your influencers typically are. Now you add PEDs into that, it gets to like a different level too, but it's like, whenever I'm looking at influences for stuff, which I do, I you can tell real quick who the ones are that have actually either done something significant in their sport or have trained enough people to actually know things too. Like it's pretty, you could tell pretty quick as long as you have some experience too, but it sucks that people who don't know any better, you know, you and me and look the same as like people that haven't trained a single human ever, you know?
That's why. Yeah, and it's just the thing is that we're in an industry where people want nothing but the fastest results, and they want to achieve these unattainable results that have been portrayed to them by their favorite fitness influencer or by their favorite athlete, and they're all their favorite athlete doing is pushing their product without it giving them a real realization of one. My body is the way it is because I have one, either great, phenomenal genetics, because genetics do play a major role in your overall fitness, in your overall quality of life. Because I'll tell you outright, my guy, who is currently dealing with his, with the cancer, Mike, the most healthiest guy you'll ever meet, 36 years old, never smokes, doesn't drink really, doesn't do drugs, is an athlete, built. Like, you mean...
He did everything right and still got it.
Literally did everything right, but then genetically got fucked.
Yep.
So that's where it comes down to a point where sometimes with these clientele, I have to have a real heart-to-heart with them, and I have to tell them and be real honest and brutal with them. I tell them, like, you may not get the results that you're thinking about right now, but that's not what you need to be focusing on.
Well, and you,
the results that you're going to be ready.
Exactly. Well, there's a big thing. It was, do you follow Pat Davidson at all, Dr. Pat Davidson on Instagram? So he had a thing once where he was like, look, man, someone will come in and want to look like this picture of a unicorn. And they're a rhino. And they're like, look, we both are on four legs. We both have, like, a horn on our nose. I look like a giant rhino right now, you know, an out of shape rhino. I want to look like this unicorn stallion looking thing. And he's like, you know, you got to have that conversation where, look, I mean, we can make you the leanest, most badass looking rhino ever, but you're still probably never going to be a unicorn. And that's okay. That you can't change your bone structure, you know, like you can't, but that doesn't mean we can't make you awesome. It's just you're going to look slightly different than another person because you're not the same person, you know?
Yeah, and I love it when people say, well, but so-and-so does this and so-and-so does that. Well, are you so-and-so? Did you literally see them do exactly what the hell you're talking about? Because a good question to the people, last time I checked, they're also... Very much boosters and boasters of shit that they have never done before. Mm-hmm. Or never even, like, the fakeness of what social media truly can bring.
Well, and do you follow Goob at all?
Goob?
Goob, U2, I think is his Instagram name. So he basically, like, outs fitness industry people for, like, photoshopping and stuff like that. And dude,
I have to look him up now. Yeah, I love that shit.
I'll message you to him. He's probably the most prolific one right now. Like he outs basically people that are doing like sexual misconduct stuff, and then like the Photoshop-y things. And it's like, man, you add good genetics, you add discipline, you add PEDs, and you add Photoshop now on top of it too. It's like, man, talk about like I remember when I was growing up. Are you in your 20s? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm 29.
Okay. Oh, I might be 29. Almost in your 30s. So I'm in my 40s. And so probably not too far off though, but I remember when I was a kid, like, there was so many issues with, like, airbrushing on the cover of magazines, so women were, like, checking out these unattainable results, and I'm like, dude, it's more now for the women and the men. Like, everyone at the top level, big influencers, just Photoshop, like, wild, and, like, the difference on a Photoshop versus the difference on an airbrush is a lot, you know? So it's just hard to, it's hard to get people to see that. So yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, especially there's terminology now behind some of the things that these people that this generation deal with, like Snapchat filter dysmorphia.
Right.
Have you heard of that?
I have not.
Okay, because people have gotten so used to the filters. Because people have gotten so used to a specific filter that they get on Snapchat. It's when they see themselves regular, they have an instant like, oh my God, this is what I look like.
That's crazy.
It's a legitimate thing. And I didn't think it was. And then I did my own little, you know, research on the Google University.
Right.
And yeah, it's actually a thing that's been developed because of these unreal expectations or unrealistic pictures that we have of ourselves, that we think that we look great, that it's showing that our flaws. Like when we don't have this filter on, when we put this filter on, we're able to be, you know, completely clean face, or, you know, our eyes look a little better, maybe we look a little tanner, maybe we look a little younger in that picture, and then when the filter's not on there, maybe you see a couple other things as well. Maybe you see the freckles a little more, maybe you see a line or two in your forehead, you know, all these other like minor little things that, you know, come with being, you know, with one of the core fucking human.
Right.
You know, as you get older.
Dude, as you're saying this stuff, I'm literally touching my face and like, ah, yeah, there's a wrinkle there. Ah, I can feel it. getting old sucks.
It does, but also at the same time, though, it comes with the mentality. Like, right. It comes with the mentality of, like, you know, are you aging with grace, or are you trying to retain the inevitable of knowing that you're eventually going to grow old,
right,
and trying to maintain your youth as much as possible? Like, listen, I'm all for maintaining, you know, being a kid in your head as long as you can. Right. I'm all for, you know, maintaining that youth to this way you can still enjoy the little joys of life. So, but I'm not saying at this point become victim to the world. And then also at the same time, listen to all the little noises around you, and then the, you know, fall victim towards the traps of being, that's what I'm fucking looking for here. Manipulated and abused and being told what to feel in this in this generation.
Yeah, it is wild out there. Hey, I want to change topics just a little bit, kind of delve into some other stuff here. You have a podcast as well. What is your podcast, and what's kind of your vibe? I feel so bad. I was like, okay, I got to listen to at least a couple episodes before I get them on here, and I have had some crazy gym stuff come up. But tell us a little about the podcast.
I do it very, very part-time, just because of how crazy my training schedule is here. You know, anywhere between 30, 40, 50 hours, 60 hours a week training between the two gyms and the Zoom clientele that I have as well. So I'm constantly either developing new programs for my clientele, or I'm also then working on myself as well. So I haven't really had the time to stay on top of the podcast episodes, but I think I'm at like 42 or 43 episodes of the Welsh Care podcast.
Nice.
I've had a variety of people from our community in there, from Tom, from Josh, Quincy, you know, Grappling Type 1.
Yeah.
Up in Canada. Had him on. Actually, he was one of my, like, one of the first guests, one of the first few guests I had on back in 2022 or 2021.
Wow.
I think it was 2022. Yeah, pretty sure it was around there. I had Donnie on a couple times also from EdX. You know, it's the the podcast itself is a Welsh Care podcast. I'm only on YouTube. It's a visual podcast. You'll be able to see me and interview my people either in person or through Zoom as well. I do have people come over to the apartment, and then we record everything here as well. And some of my, episodes, they range from everything from mental health to financial literacy as well. Shout out to the Bad Talk Show with Newski and Tyrell.
Nice.
They have been a blessing to know, because they've been guiding everybody that I know, including myself, the right direction towards, understanding, what's really going on between stocks and businesses and loans and everything else like that. So shout out to them. And then also I've obviously had Tom on, fitness. I had a couple of fitness trainers on. I've actually had my boss from the one of the gyms I work for, Apex, the private facility. Shout out to Amanda Riga. She owns that facility, and we did a podcast in her facility, talking about everything from when she competed to why she opened up a gym, to her career now, and where it is now versus where it was then. It's really just basically just letting people talk and about whatever they have to either promote, or giving people just, a solid three hours of quality conversation. Because
right.
The biggest thing that I've always found when I'm thankful for that I have the ability to do is have a conversation really with anyone. But at the same time, though, when I really have a conversation with someone that clicks also at the same time, the conversations become incredible. Because, especially the two like-minded individuals that don't just focus on talking about the regular gossip of what today's world is, the kind of intellectual conversations that I have with some people, either regarding fitness, regarding finance, regarding regular, lifestyle stuff, or even just a little bit to shoot the shit.
Right.
It comes with this feeling of like I'm genuinely just having a good time having this conversation. This is a very, it's an oversaturated industry now.
Yep.
Overly saturated. So I don't do it in the sense of like I'm doing it as like a part-time basis. Like I do have, obviously like the sponsors that I have for the podcast are just, my sponsors that I have. As if you just use my regular code, I already get my Instagram bio and I do my promotions for all of them already.
Right.
So it's not like I'm not getting the money's worth, but I'm not necessarily still sitting down and being able to take an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours out of my day and have the conversation. But then not only that, but then do the editing afterwards as well. Mm-hmm. I'm my own editor, where I sit down and I also edit the videos, and I make the cuts where I have to put the cuts in for the commercials and all that fun jazz. And I don't have an editor, so everything gets done on my own. And then sometimes I'm on a 2013 MacBook Pro. So it's not necessarily the most up-to-date speed MacBook, but I got it up-to-date with all the software on the inside, though.
When we are in, when we're in North Carolina, we got to talk some shop, too, because, I feel like there's a couple things you could do on your podcast to cut your editing time, crazy down. I have stuff preloaded on my setup here. If I want to, I don't know if I still have my commercials in here, but I can be and now a word from our sponsors, and then just want to holler at you guys about how you can support Meathead Chatter, the podcast here.
Hit that. You can give us a follow.
You just hit that button, and then it reads the whole thing and it's recording, so you can just get it all in there all at once. And I don't know, maybe that'll help, maybe it wouldn't, but I definitely got some dudes in the industry that'll.
I'll definitely we'll shoot each other shit, and then I'll be driving down there. So I figured I'm gonna take the road trip and get a rent a car, because one of my boys also owns a rent a car business.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, I'm gonna
get miles off your
vehicle. Yeah, exactly. Because I've already put my fair share of miles on my car between driving up and down to Niagara Falls and back from Long Island to Niagara Falls is about 7.5 hours. About 400 plus 500 plus miles. It's definitely 1,000 miles within a weekend.
I drove out there last year from Indiana, and this year I was man, I'm not doing that again. So I'm flying and renting a car. I mean, if you're just going as one person, it's almost the same price as driving anyway once you do the mileage. So
But. Yeah, I may fly out depending on whatever Donnie's doing. You know, we'll see. I'll probably touch base with Don as far as, like, you know, how's it looking as far as Airbnbs and all that stuff too. Well, just trying to do the most cost-effective thing right now, just make sure that I don't put myself into a hole. But then I also make sure that I want to get my ass down there to compete, because I want to get my ass onto that platform.
Right. So, yeah, let's talk about Vintage Strength Games a little bit. So you and I are both competing. Have you looked at the events yet?
Yeah, I definitely will say that I got a good feeling for a good portion of them. Let's see, let me actually pull them up real quick.
Yeah, I can do that too.
Frank DeMio, Fat Frank, the owner of Macefit.
Macefit, yep. I know Frank.
Yep, he is. Somebody that also has definitely helped out my career.
Oh, so you're a Macefit coach, right?
Yeah, Macefit Yep. And I actually had a chance when I went down to Florida back in February. I got a chance to meet and hang out and get lunch with the man himself. Nice. So it was definitely an honor to sit there and talk with them. Okay, I just got it right here. So we got the Mason, the clubs. We got two-hand Mace 360, two-hand Mace 300, two-hand club mills, two-hand Mace 360. Oh, no, one-hand Mace 360, one-hand Mace 300.
I'm looking at the link now, too. They left a couple of the events off of the actual flyer just because they have so many events right now. They have single hand outside club mills too, which I love. I hate.
Oh my god!
I hate two handed club mills. It is my least favorite thing to do.
Really?
I just feel like the grip gets more sore than it should for that movement. Like, I mean, you can go heavy because it's two handed, but like, I just hate it. I would much rather do single arm outside.
I mean, yeah, I can feel that with when it comes down to the weight distribution. But I will say that it's for me personally, I love a two handed mill with clubs, especially when I load it up not to 80 pounds.
Oh no!
Good God, that was. I have a video of when I attempted to do it, and yeah, it's not there just yet. I mean, I got it done, but it's not
for 5 minutes.
No, definitely not for 5 minutes. There's no way in here, but. For a good 2 minutes, I was able to do for the 52 pounds.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that 50, I have a 55er from White Lions Athletic that I've rocked for pretty good time before, but, God, I just
see White
that
Lion movement. Is also, they're that thick-ass handle.
They do have well. In the pommel on the bottom, it's real big, and it's very flat, and it, like, because of its circumference, it almost digs into your wrist weird. Like, I like, they are a great deal for a fixed club. They are a awesome, if you're looking for fixed clubs and you don't want to pay, like, Great Lakes gear prices, they're the heavy guys to go with. And then if you need to go any heavier, you got to go Great Lakes gear. But I still think, I like the Adex for adjustable clubs for sure.
I understand that you got to charge because it's heavier, but I mean, come on, guys. You got a little give on these fucking prices.
Yeah.
When the 362-pound kettlebell that Tom has at his gym.
Well, probably because he only had, like, five made, so, like, just to get any margin at all is probably wild on that one.
Yeah, it's like $1,500 for that one kettlebell. $1,500.
That's
for
crazy.
A single kettlebell. I'm trying to convince the owner of my gym, one of them at Munich Fitness, to get it.
Dude, I would love to have. So I've talked with Colin a pretty fair amount, and I have his clubs. I even have that adjustable one that he made that was like club or mace if you screw it together that goes to like 44, and then my my 100 and my 85. Clubs are his, and then so I got some fixed weight stuff from him. I have maces that are like 30, 35, 40 from him as well, and they're cool. I really like them, but dude, yeah, it is a price premium for sure for his stuff. I mean, I love his stuff, but man, when you compare it to an adjustable option, it's like, yeah, adjustables are expensive, but not if you're going to be swinging heavy, they're not.
No, and especially addicts, as you know, and thankfully the boys, you know, Donnie, Dewey, and everyone over there, Sebastian, you know, they did it right when it comes down to the pricing too, because when I break it down for people that think like, oh, I'm going to spend that much money on just one piece of equipment. It's like, no, you're spending that much money on about 6 to 7 pieces of equipment.
Well, it's like getting a set of adjustable dumbbells versus a set of like fixed weight. Like you can get, you know, the Pepin Fast Series to 120 pounds for like, I mean, you can get it for like 1400 now from Rep Fitness, but before it was like $2,000. But if you were going dumbbells in 5 pound increments from 5 to 125 pounds, you're going to be dropping like $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's the same with the maces and the clubs too. The convenience of not having to switch weights is nice, but is it worth that much money? For most people, probably not.
No, and especially if you're a coach or if you're someone who is just a swinger on the regular.
Right.
You need a mace swinger, obviously. the whole the adjustable part, it just makes it so much easier for you to not only just micromanage your way up, like basically.
Right.
You start off just at 25, then go to 27.5, then go to 30, 30.5. You know, you have that ability to go in that, you know, that 0.5 and that quarter rep range and quarter weight range for people to ease their way up into the next week or they're, so they don't destroy their shoulders and destroy their elbows. There's people that I see at Unique, we have White Lion clubs. We only have one weight for four clubs, but they're all the same weight. They're 18
Okay, 18's a decent 18's a decent weight for a club. Like that's not like a first time touching a club kind of weight. For smaller females or whatever. Motions.
Yeah, for a single hand though is where the problem for majority of the people.
Right.
Like when people let go of it with one hand and it instantly starts to wobble, I'm like, wow.
Yep.
Like and I grab it and then it stays as still as a foot and they're looking at my forearm and looking at the club belt and they're like, how the hell is that thing not moving?
The wrist stability was the biggest thing when I started swinging. I was like, wow, I'm strong, but my wrists are very weak for what we're trying to do here right now. I've actually started training a little bit for arm wrestling and all the club and mace work, like being able to keep that wrist stable has made like a pretty huge difference for me, like as I start training for it. But you know, there's differences, of course. I still get killed by people a lot smaller than me, but like I feel like I have a better like base for it from Mason clubs than I would have had I not messed with them first, for sure.
Yeah, and honestly with these tools, so the way I break it down for anyone who ever asked like what's the major benefit behind them, well, we want to think of it this way. What are the most common injuries that we have in the gym place, in today's gym culture? You have shoulders and you have back issues.
Mm-hmm.
So with clubs, you're really able to not only help the body fight off the frailness of your shoulders because you're not moving multi-pronged motions.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of you just going in a pressing motion, going forward, going up, lateral raise, you know, all the other traditional motions.
Yeah, it's not transitioning really through planes, for sure.
Yes. And you're not also at the same time swinging with a weight that essentially, you know, could just, it's at a certain weight, you know, 100, 200 plus pounds, I'll swing with one arm, it could just lodge your shoulder.
Right.
And your shoulder being a multipolar joint, it's not just, like I said before, it's not just one group where you can go one singular motion. You have to go in a multipolar motion to get the full benefit behind building strong shoulders. You want to have full range of motion in your shoulders, yes, but can you have full range of motion and be strong behind your shoulders? You know, can you, you know, eventually press, you know, heavy ass weight, you know, 180, right, 190, 200 plus pounds above your head, without, you know, any pain or without any type of real buckling or aggravation? You know, the thing that I see with my clientele is that once we really started focusing on not only just doing like, you know, single arm mills, But when we really started doing the multi-pointer motions, that they really started to see the true strength that they can develop behind their range of motion as well. Like, yes, you can get your arms above your head. Yes, you can hold yourself up. But guess what? Now you can also now press up heavy weight. You'll be able to pull heavy weight now, too. You know, these things that you'll be able to fight off these frozen shoulders from developing. You know, there's so many benefits that come from doing this training style.
100%.
It's not only just going to, you know, like I said in the very beginning of the podcast, it's not just you swinging around a heavy weight. It's not like you just deadlifting, you know, 400 or 500 plus pounds. It's not like you benching. It's not like you just squatting. Like these motions are also made for rehabbing as well.
Mm-hmm.
These tools are made to help not only just help your body get strong, but also help your body
survive healthy. Too.
Yeah,
I feel like its value for prehab is like so understated. I feel like people use bands in similar ways as what, you know, clubs can be used to some degree after they hurt themselves. But man, if you just get some of it in your training before you hurt yourself, you probably won't hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks cool.
Especially once you get it right. Once you get the fundamentals down and everything else, then it looks good. Otherwise, then it looks like just a wacky waving. What is that fucking thing? Wacky inflatable waving arm tube man. That thing is the blow up wall in front of a store.
Right.
And then you flailing their arms around. I see some of the people who pick up a mace for the first time and then they just throw it right over their shoulder versus catching it off to the side and then they whack themselves right in the butt.
Yep.
It's a feeling where I say, yep, I know that feeling all too well. And then that's when my happy ass walks up to them and I tell them, hey, what's going on? I just learned about this motion and all that stuff because it's not necessarily the most traditional thing to see anyone do in my gym.
Right.
But when people actually think it's amazing and start becoming more curious, I'm like, okay, let's see who you know. Or let's see what you know.
Right.
And then I get to, you know, blow their mind a little bit when I bring out the 60-pound Big Bertha that I got from Tom. That is my big grave one that I just swing around for 20, 30 reps without even stopping.
Right.
And they look at it like, how the hell do you even pick it up? It's all technique over time. It's just, I'm going to post up the video next week of the 3-year anniversary of the me picking up a club for the first time.
Oh, I love it.
The video, don't laugh too hard.
I will laugh so hard.
Don't laugh too hard when you watch that shit because when I'm swinging around this thing in my living room and I'm looking at it like, what the fuck am I doing right now? They're like, what do they have me using this tool for? Like, what is this piece of equipment? And then now, fast forward 3 years later, I teach this shit on the regular. Mm-hmm. So it's crazy how these things work out eventually, or what can really happen if you open up your mind and your eyes to new possibilities and ideas towards your careers. You know, at the four Masons and Clubs and everything else, I was a regular, you know, let's do some turf work, let's do some sand balls, let's use a tire, mm-hmm. let's go, you know, hit a couple of machines, let's go hit the bench real quick. Now it's like, oh, fuck all that. Give me the sandbags, give me the kettlebells, give me the clubs, give me the maces, give me all this stuff.
Let's do the weird stuff.
Yeah, right? I want to be the weirdo that people stare at, you know, when I'm, sitting there, just swinging around a club over my head, looking like a barbarian. The first
right.
week of me doing that 3 years ago, I got so many stares. Like, what the fuck is this guy doing? It also didn't help that I had very long hair then as well. But the fact that I had hair that went down to my basically halfway down my ass crack. So yeah, I definitely looked like Conan the Barbarian swinging the shit around.
That's awesome.
I actually dressed up as Conan the Barbarian for Halloween one of the years, and I took a picture with my attic club. So,
I see it. I see you. 2022, long hair.
Yeah.
Long hair, don't care.
Yeah. And I donated it last year in the last weekend of July, as I said, all right, it's time because it's now been 3.5 years, and the thing needs to go. Because I am tired of taking care of it. Which I had the luscious lock. I miss it.
Right.
I definitely did miss it. But I also genuinely just love now the fact that I can just, you know, hop out of the shower and wash back, you know, just scrub back and forth on my towel real quick. And boom, I'm good to go. Yeah, versus having to sit there, let it air dry, and then I can put it up, and then I do the product in, all this shit. I don't miss that part. I miss the way it looks, but I don't miss actually genuinely taking care of it.
Yeah, I have tried to grow my hair out on many occasions, and I always get to like that first awkward stage, and I'm like, nope, and then I cut it right off.
You gotta get to that awkward stage. Yeah. I remember my awkward stage. You look like a fucking mushroom head and anything else. But once it grows out, then it grows out, and then it looks like you're gonna get the luscious locks.
Love it. All right, dude, we're gonna bring this sucker in for a landing here. Where can people find you?
Cool. So I'm really only active on Instagram. I really try not to stay on social media too long in general. I don't really like social media outside of for business tactics and being able to promote content and meet individuals such as yourself. So you can find me on Instagram, WelshCare, WelshCare underscore Tales, Talez. And you can also find me on YouTube with the Welsh Care podcast. Anyway, you spell Welsh Care and type podcast afterwards. You see a couple episodes on there. I gotta get you on there one of these days.
Yeah, I'm in, dude. You also you have a link tree in your Instagram too, so they can find your Instagram through or your YouTube through that as well. So definitely check his stuff out.
There's a couple of different products of different companies and also I'm affiliated with.
Perfect.
Usually if there's like any type of event or anything like that I'm going to be attending, I'll post it up there as well.
Love it. Awesome. And then as always, y'all can find me on Instagram at strawman_Dan. All my links are there too for the YouTube and all that stuff. Announcement, I just opened my Instagram to subscriptions. I'll be posting about that here this week. Gonna have some daily workout regimens posted on there, free access to some ebooks and stuff, and it's gonna be pretty cool. Gonna be $10 a month.
And cool. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, dude. All right, well, hey, that was Tim Welsh, and dude, thanks for coming on the podcast. I was excited about this one when Donnie told me who you were and I started looking at some of your videos. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is going to be cool. He's going to be my kind of dude.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, it's always an honor. Like I told you before, I genuinely do just, I love the art of conversation and, connecting with our community. You know, there's not a lot of people out there that can swim the weight that would believe that we swim the weight.
Right.
So it's also, it's just nice to genuinely talk to people who are like-minded and especially other people in the fitness industry from all across the country here. Big brains. I love this stuff. I love talking to people. So it's an honor and I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome, dude. Appreciate you. And that brings us in for a landing on episode 49.